Welcome back to another edition of the Why Hockey Periodical Podcast. With me is Matthew Lichtenstatter. I'm Thomas Krulikowski. Let's talk Florida Panthers. We had a few scrimmage games, a few prospect games. We had, you know, the doubleheader with Nashville, which is always fun. But we finally had the true game versus Montreal. Barkov with a C on his chest. A lot of the lineup that we're expecting to see was on the ice. So it was kind of the first feel for what this year's Panthers will look like and act like on the ice.
The first thing I want to say, though, before we get to this, of course, I hope you enjoyed the Brock McGillis show. I had a lot of fun recording that, as you might well imagine. Brock is truly an amazing guy, and I hope you listened to it and learned something. That's the number one goal, was to teach people about this sort of thing. And he made some incredible comments. The one that stuck with me is the fact that, you know, the fact that he could get people to listen to him because he played hockey, to listen to him and what he's saying, even though we're dealing with such a touchy issue in the sport, was truly incredible. That's about an hour, 15 minutes long. It's evergreen. It's still up on Podbean. I hope you listen to it, and I hope you really enjoy it, and I hope Brock is now on a bunch more shows. I've tried to pip him out to 31 Thoughts, to Steve Dangle's show. I'm trying my best here, dude. He's fantastic, and he deserves the kind of publicity. He has it, but like he goes around to schools in Canada and talks about this. He goes around to junior teams and talks, but more people should know that what he's doing, and obviously I care. You know that I've come out publicly now already, but it's important that more people know this, because as I said, like, most people are well-meaning but don't know what to do and don't know how to challenge hockey's culture, and in many ways it is not something that is bad per se, but it's something that needs to be challenged because it excludes people from the game, and the LGBT community is one of them. And very important that you go listen to that show. I have not listened to it since we recorded it, but I'm going to do that at some point. It was an awesome, awesome thing to do. And if you can follow Brock on Twitter, Instagram, do that. And if you tell him a good note from me, we're gonna try to make sure that he gets to more shows and he's more famous and popular and influential in hockey circles, because then we can say that not only did we do it, but that we're doing good by a certain group of people in hockey that need it. And so I wanted to say that off the top first. And I'm also going to say I'm sorry for having a bit of a scratchy voice. I've been spending the last 2 days yelling at the NHL and Max Domi.
Right, yeah, who has?
I was about to say, like, the real way you know hockey's back is Max Domi is sucker-punching people for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised his father didn't fall down, you know, the stairs and land on the fan and start punching him in the face
penalty,
as well.
Penalty box.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely surprised by that. But I did actually get to watch, because I remembered very briefly on Wednesday night at the start of the second period, oh, they're showing this in Canada, I might be able to watch this on NHL TV, and I did. So I watched the second two periods, and there are some interesting things that we should talk about. Firstly, I want to talk about Barkov the captain first, because I give credit to everybody on Twitter, the small, dedicated, but very vocal Panthers community on Twitter, noticing on media day that Derek McKenzie didn't have a C on his sweater, the team saying, that's nothing, and then 2 days later, Barkov's captain. I found that really amazing. Good work, citizen journalists.
They kind of forced them into, like, denying but not denying.
Yeah.
And kind of tipping their hand a bit. And it was fun to see. And it's kind of like those little things. It's why I wish Florida Panthers fans were more vocal about, like, you know, not being happy with shit. Because, you know, you do that, you force them into weird positions, and they have to act quickly, and they, you know, they did the right thing. They, you know, they didn't wait long, and they got the C on Barkov, and, you know, that was probably the plan all along. That was definitely the plan all along, but, you know, I like...
By making them announce
earlier. I don't know how long they're gonna wait or whatever, but it definitely was funny to see him sweat when they got caught.
So I want to talk about, firstly, just the fact that he is the C. We've talked about the captaincy before with this team. I personally don't think it means a ton. But that being said, I know in hockey it means a ton. There are not many players like Barkov who are captains in the NHL. Now, there are plenty of best players on team who are captains. You know, sometimes we see that. And Barkov's clearly the best player on the team.
I don't like that whole, like, guys like Barkov. I don't see, like, we don't talk about Anze Kopitar so much as like a quiet guy or this guy with no voice, or, you know, the guys talk about how he's just like a mute. That's the image that fans, especially fans who don't follow Florida closely, or even Florida fans who don't pay attention, they see Barkov as a mute. But, you know, at the end of the day, Trocheck, who everyone wanted to be captain, this was the guy that Trocheck wants to be captain. Yeah. This is the guy that inspires Trocheck to put in the extra gear. And that's what matters inside the room. We don't see what happens when the door is closed. Well, and, you know,
Joker a lot. We hear that he's funny, but he just doesn't show it publicly.
So he has a voice. It's a different voice. And maybe we don't get to see, you know, we don't get to see what happens when someone shows up to the bus 2 minutes late and has to walk by Barkov. We don't get to see that. Maybe he gives them a stare. Maybe he pulls people aside and is like, all right, it happens one time, doesn't happen again. And, you know, people know if Barkov's talking to you, it's an issue. And, you know, maybe that's how it works. So, but what you want in a captain is somebody who everyone in the locker room respects and everyone listens to, and somebody who doesn't have the ego where he can't let other people lead too. Because the thing is, it doesn't take one person, it takes seven. It's not just even the four other people with the A's. It's going to be Luongo. Luongo is maybe even a de facto captain.
Well, he already was. We already went
to City, right? Henry. Yeah. So it's so many people, and Barkov's the type of guy where he's not going to get upset if, you know, like after the game with Domi, Luongo's the one stepping up and saying something about how, you know, well, you know, I hope the league does something, but, you know, we play him in December, blah, 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 and kind of making idle threats or whatever you want to call them. But, you know, Barkov doesn't have to do it. Luongo's got to do it. But, you know, some guys might have the ego where they feel like it's stepping on their toes. I want to be the guy who says that. I want to be the guy who's always in front of the camera. I always have to be leading the charge. Where Barkov, you know, isn't that guy. And I think that's a good thing.
No, you're absolutely right. And I have no problem with it being named captain. I don't think anybody expected it was going to happen.
Right.
But
I think
it does is good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people undercut Barkov because it's such a trope now. I think it's at a gimmick, cliche, trope level of Barkov's a quiet. I think he was quiet. I mean, you know, like he got a better handle on the language. He has a better handle on the area. I mean, he's doing more advertisements and stuff in both languages, in two countries. He's playing on national teams. He's going to all these different NHL events and doing all these interviews. He's not the same person, and he's not going to be the same person 3 years from now that he is now. And, you know, you want him to be the guy picking up the cup first, period.
Yeah.
When everybody thinks of the Florida Panthers winning the cup, it's Barkov's going to be the reason, you know, the main factor, and he's the guy everyone wants to see raise the cup. And I think, you know, when the owners feel that way, when the players feel that way, and, you know, most of the fans at the end of the day feel that way probably too, you got to go with it. I know Trocheck has the lunch pail, blue collar mentality.
I've always been advertising for Huberto to be the captain. That was for a while.
Resume-wise, and I think, you know, Huberto is going to be a huge part of this leadership group, and just like Trocheck is. I mean, I think those three you couldn't go wrong with. I think, you know, I believe in Ekblad as a leader. I think with some of this shit he's gone through with not having the partners and the injury history and all this stuff, like, I just want him to focus on becoming that monster number one defenseman and being part of the leadership group. I don't need him to worry about being like the actual C. Where, you know, Barkov, Trocheck, Huberto, they're on the other end of monster years, going to take the next step. It's not really as much of a worry.
Nope, but that was definitely a fun announcement when I woke up on Monday to see that. And
best announcement. I mean, that announcement was better than like the jersey rebrand announcement. Better announcement than finding out we had new owners. Better announcement than Dale as GM. Pick a time.
They're learning.
You know, like that is probably the best Panthers news besides Barkov being drafted.
Yeah. Oh, the stories,
and then are fun. Probably back until when we acquired Pavel Bure. That was probably the you know, like it's that kind of level. This is a watershed moment for a lot of people. I mean, this is going to be 20 years later. This is the start of a chapter.
Mm-hmm. This is the start of the Panthers maybe finally being consistently good.
Yeah. I mean, good, bad, or ugly, this is the start of a chapter.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual play on the ice because we watched it. We both watched that game. And can I say a couple of things about it? It's preseason, and I don't know how many times the Panthers are actually going to play like that in the preseason with that kind of lineup, but did they look faster? Because I think they look faster.
Well, I mean,
maybe it's because the Canadians...
There's a difference between playing fast, there's a difference between playing quick, and there's a difference between playing fast and in control or quick and in control. And I think the Panthers were just playing fast. I mean, they had a lot of get up and go. The puck movement was pretty good, but you know they weren't. I don't think in a regular season against a regular. I mean, this was a halved NHL AHL prospect lineup for one of the worst teams in the NHL, and the Panthers are a top 12 team in the NHL, at least offensively. And in the preseason, if you're dressing a, you know, a top 12, top 10 offense and just letting them rip with all those power plays, with all that, you know, open ice, it's going to be a bad night. I mean, it doesn't matter if you play Carey Price 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Carey Price looked great, too. You know, it's not like Montreal didn't have anybody good in the game. But
what, Jonathan Drouin playing a wing and then playing a center again?
Jonathan Drouin with his Olli Jokinen as a natural predator hair.
Nah. poor Jonathan Drouin.
But, I mean, they looked great. This is what I'll say. They looked like they played at the end of last year so far. You know, it was in the same vein, same style. They were, you know, they were kind of clicking. It looked pretty good. But at the same time, what were the issues? The defense pairs were the same, and it was the same issues that this Montreal team in the preseason was picking off and kind of, you know, they were feasting on it a little bit, and they were getting some runs, and the ice was getting tilted in the wrong way. Cause you know, Mark Pisick wasn't able to support his partner, or Mackenzie Weegar just seems off in his time so far. And I'm a big Weegar guy, and you know, I think Pisick's pretty solid. So I'm not saying it's too much of an indicator, but the offense is looking great. The goalies look pretty good. Reimer looks a little shaky.
Hutchinson
looks better than expected. Luongo looks better than expected. I don't like the two periods, one period split, but who am I to judge?
It's a preseason game, boss.
I think it's killing Montembeau. Get him more NHL shots. He needs more non-Florida Panthers NHL shots at the ice den. He needs to start seeing them at some age. If he's not playing this in the NHL this year, this is his last chance. Mm-hmm. So, like, give him a full preseason game. Why not? What do you have to lose?
We've got how many more do they have left?
They play Tampa Bay like how many times?
Three times.
Give them at least two halves of, or give them at least a full game.
Yeah, I think that we'll see that.
Because he needs to see it. He needs to be able to see. I mean, there's a lot of good shots in the AHL, and he'll be challenged. But he needs to see like how tough, like what a shot of by his ears is going to feel like in the slot with Artemi Panarin or whoever, you know, it is.
If it's the Lightning, it'll be any number of like five guys.
Right. Right. Yeah. He needs to see it. Like he needs to be like, all right, this is a bar I have to achieve. I have to even get to just, you know, a 9-10 save percentage in this league, mm-hmm. just to like be a backup goalie.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to see that. But the offense looks great. The defense, it's what are they going to do differently? I want to see more. I want to see Mikoshin more. Where has he been? Why are they hiding him? I want to see McDonald more. I like they played him. I want to see Melchiori more. Hey, let's see Petrovic more because I don't see enough from the top, any of them. I mean, I think Yandel.
Until one of them is traded, right? Which we kind of figure is going to happen.
Yeah, but so, yeah, give them, sport them around. But, you know, in practice, again, it's Ekblad Yandel. All right, I thought we were going to be trying something new.
I think they will at some point this preseason, but they didn't.
No, guys, stop. No excuses. They keep saying they're going to experiment with it. When? They experimented for one game last year, and before the third period of that game, they switched back to it. That was all they – that's what they did. That was all the experimentation. But I know. That's the thing is, it's them getting cold feet. So is it Capuano? Is it Bugner? And they got to stop it because you got to just give more looks because it's not that great. And as soon as an injury goes, then you have to shuffle around, and no one has experience playing with anyone else. You don't know how they're going to react. You don't know if you have to make adjustments to the D zone coverage because you never give any looks to it in preseason when you can experiment. This is the time to experiment, and they say they're going to do it.
Let's start by talking about offense. We'll talk about power play because the Panthers had a lot of power play time thanks to Max Domi getting a rush of blood to the head.
right.
That, to put it mildly. Boy, those top two lines are good.
Power play looked good. Zone entries looked a lot improved.
Much better.
I don't know who I'm guessing it's what's his name? Paul McFarland.
Yeah.
From Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's running the power play, or he's at least running the offense. I think it shows that Bugner and them were putting in a lot of work this season because out of the gate, it was a couple new looks on the zone entries. And I don't know if it's just because who they're playing against or they're new and, teams haven't really seen them or were expecting something else. It worked. But I like that they were trying new things on the power play.
Specifically, Mike Hoffman on Unit 1, which I did not expect, but...
Huberto's spot.
In Huberto's spot. You could argue... And I think we'll see this as time goes on, that because he is a shooter and the Panthers' power play is a lot of really good passers and shooters, but not one that's really good at one or the other. Clearly, with Mike Hoffman, he is a shooter first. So it made the power play a little bit ragged at times. But boy, when he gets chances, it just fires away. Like the Panthers, for all of the great puck movement that they can have in that top unit especially, they never had anybody who really just fired away. Like, they had a lot of good passers, and you were always wondering, like, who's going to shoot the puck here? They have a lot of good players that can do that.
Here's the thing. I thought last year Trocheck was that guy. I thought they got to the point where they rotated the puck around and got it to Trocheck, and he became that trigger man, and he feasted off of it. And I thought that's how... and he was even able to take it to the next level and start making plays and being the primary playmaker off, I'm going to shoot a lot the first time around. Second time around, I'm going to fake the shot and be able to move it to the guy in the slot or back to the point or to whomever. I think Hoffman, I like that they put him on the first power play unit, get him the reps. I think they'll slot him around in a few different spots, and I hope they do on both power play 1 and 2. I think you have to figure out who you want your trigger man to be, and I think more importantly, you have to figure out where you want Aaron Ekblad to play and where you want Sasha Barkov to play. In the preseason, it's okay to have Sasha Barkov just stand in front of the net on the power play. In an NHL regular season game, you cannot waste 2 minutes on the power play by having Sasha Barkov stand on the ice and not touch the puck. If he's going to play in front of the net, you got to start running more reverse umbrella behind the goal line. You got to start doing more down low cycling or something to involve him or have him pop out or do something because you got to use him more. I would like to see Ekblad on the first unit and then have Yandel feeding Hoffman on the second unit because you have Barkov a lefty feeding Ekblad a righty. That works. And you have feeding Trocheck a righty. So you have Barkov and Huberto lefties making passes to the right-handed to the other side with Trocheck and Ekblad. So I think, that's how it's going to eventually shake out. But
the other
I want
thing
them.
I saw from that second unit was they went to 4-1 because last year by the end of the year they were 3-2, and also because they just didn't have the forwards to play it. But
right.
I believe the unit was what Huberto, Bjugstad, McCann, Borgstrom, and Ekblad until Ekblad got hurt. Doesn't seem too bad to me. That actually because last year the power play was so unbalanced where the top unit was just so much better than the second. Now let's say if they use that, which they may or may not, but even if they put Hoffman there or they adjust. The second power play unit's not nearly as lopsidedly bad compared to the first one. Because now you have at least either Hoffman, who's a really good shooter, you have Borgstrom, who could obviously make plays, Nick Bjugstad, who's a huge presence in front of the net. And I got to say, the best player just from watching the second two periods of that game was Jared McCann. Boy, does he look good. Not just the shorthanded stuff, but he looked fantastic.
And I think, you know, if we're all lucky and we don't say anything too loud and we won't jinx it, that's the third line. Because
you know what? I said that watching that game. I'm like, if that's the third line going into the season, no one should complain. That's a perfectly good third line.
That's a great top nine. I think Dennis Malgin does a lot to facilitate that. He does. McCann does a lot down low in the D zone. He's really done well without the puck and rounding that out from his Vancouver days. Hopefully it's because of that development in Springfield, and some of that will, you know, somehow find its way into other prospects and we can be hopeful. But he's turned into a really solid 3C option, or even a 4C, or you know, just a utility player.
McCann
a better
is the kind of player that you
a better Colin Sevier.
Jared McCann is the kind of player you need if you're going to do well in the playoffs. You need somebody like him to be a player that steps up. And I have to say, from the start of last year to the end, he grew immensely. Again, I don't know what his ceiling is. He's not going to be asked to do a whole ton because, let's be honest, the top six on this team is really, really, really good. But if he's in third C, I don't think anybody can complain about
that. His ceiling to me is... what's his name? Sutter, or, you know, Jared Stahl, or these three C's that you pump up with a good playoff run and you dump them right before their UFA. You know, like, I mean,
Jordan and Stahl, you're thinking, right?
Yeah, but then, you know, there's also Sutter's. I mean, Pittsburgh's done it with all their three C's.
Nick Bonino.
Yeah, I mean,
it's possible.
Three C's are where you do it.
What about a certain number 95?
That's a good clip. That's a good quote out of context.
Yes, it is. What about a certain 95? What about Henrik Borgstrom? Because we saw him a little bit at the end of last year. This is the first time I've really had a chance to watch him, because I didn't really watch the last two games last season.
They made a good decision to move him off center.
I'm thinking that that's probably wise for now. But
I think it's wise, period.
Already you can see, though, that he has the creativity and the vision that is just unmatched.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're thinking long term, Barkov and Trocheck are going to be the 1-2 centers for the next 5 years. And they're both probably going to play roughly 18 to 20 minutes a night. So how much time is left for that 3C? That might be enough for Dennis Malgin or Jared McCann or, you know, Nick Bjugstad or whoever would be slotted into that 3C role to be happy with. But, you know, Henrik Bjorkstrom in 2 or 3 years is going to need more time. So eventually he's going to be a top six winger. I mean,
I don't think there's any doubt about that. But right now, I can completely understand why they're running with what they're running with. And let's be honest, that's what we thought when they acquired Hoffman. This is what it's going to look like. Someone's going to play their off wing.
Yeah, but that's why you make him a center. I mean, that's why you make him a winger now. And that's why you have Jared McCann, who's a center and who's comfortable center.
And
who
can play as a center.
Yeah, so you have three guys who can play a center. McCann's a lefty, Malgin's a righty. So, you know, you're covered. Borgstrom doesn't have to take faceoffs. He can if he wants to. He can if you want him to. You know, it's you have a bunch of flexibility. The thing is, you know, at the end of the day, just remember, he's going to be a winger. So don't do the whole Nick Bjugstad
the Montreal Canadiens thing.
That's more
at that.
Yeah, because then, you know, pretty soon, you know, Dennis Malgin's gonna be running around punching people square on the nose because he doesn't know what position he plays.
Yep, it seems true to that. But I think the other thing about that is, like, we know at some point this year, Borgstrom's gonna play in the top six. You just know it's going to happen at some point. Somebody's going to have a little bit of a bad run, whether it be Bjugstad, whether it be Hoffman or somebody, and they're going to move Borgstrom up. It's going to happen at some point. You don't know when, but you know it's going to happen. And that's his run out when he plays as a top six winger. And it's going to be fine. I mean, in the end, the lines you saw on Wednesday night are probably the lines that they're going to run with as much as they can, because they work. And you could already see with Bjugstad, Dadonov, and Barkov, you know why they're keeping that together. Even if it might not necessarily be the ideal, in air quotes, the chemistry they have is just insane. And they picked up right where they left off. You could see just how good they play together and all of the things that made that line so good last year. I mean, again, one game, but it looked like it just picked up again where it left off, and that's exciting. And Hoffman seems like a good fit with Trocheck and Huberdeau because Huberdeau's a good playmaker. Trocheck's a drive-the-net guy, and Hoffman could just fire shots. And Hoffman also seems like he's got a lot of speed, too, which you never really noticed when we watched him play for Ottawa. He didn't look as fast. Maybe that's because he's playing for Guy Boucher, but he looked a lot faster on Wednesday, too.
See, I don't know. Hoffman's, I don't really think he's that fast. I mean, I think...
Maybe it's just because the way the Panthers play, he looks
faster. It's the way they play. I mean, I think he's a solid skater, but he doesn't really do a lot of edge work. And he, you know, he picks his spots when he uses his speed. So it's like, you know, the way he plays, which is fine. I mean, that's how he's supposed to play. That's how we want him to play, to score 40 goals on that second line. That's fine. I don't care. It's just, you know, I don't think he's going to be a burner for us in the same way that, like, Andre Athanasiou would be, or, you know, somebody like that, or, you know, even... I think Henrik Borgstrom's going to be. I think he's going to end up being the guy who just flies around people more so. I think Hoffman's a guy who can blow by you and can, like, you know, catch up on the back check when he needs to.
He's a guy who I always say he might be faster with the puck than without it. And when he needs to have that little burst to free up some space, that might be what he ends up being the best
at. Yeah, it's kind of like Phil Kessel. It's kind of like, you know, he's fast.
Anybody should complain.
Right, yeah, I mean, he's a cheaper Phil Kessel.
He is definitely a cheaper Phil Kessel. Quickly into the defense, I mean, we talked about it a bit. I want to say that, of course, I think things are going to end up changing defensively. We didn't see Mikosh,
I don't think they are. I mean,
I'm giving them a little bit of time.
I'll give them a little bit of time for everything, but when it comes to breaking up Yandle and Ekblad, I don't believe that'll happen until they do it for like 2 weeks. Because at this rate, Bugner, he keeps admitting every time he says he's like, but I really like him. Like, why? Why do you really like him? Here's the thing, Bob, and I'm speaking to you man to man, I really have a lot of respect for you. But if you
know the people inside the Panthers organization listen to this show.
If you are always going back to, we need to split up Yandle and Ekblad for the better of the team, maybe you shouldn't like them that much. Maybe it's an issue that you liking them that much is hurting the team. If other people outside the team, if people inside the team, I know there's people inside the team who probably are saying that, but also Bugner believes that too. He thinks that the team is better served with them apart. He says this all the time, or as much as he says he likes them. What's it going to be, Bob? Is your liking of them together going to win out and hurt the team, or are you going to break them up and experiment? You lost a really great game because, you know, with that lineup you iced on Monday, you were going to get the win. You knew it, right? So, like, you know, why didn't you use that to experiment? Because it's so safe. Because the offense, all they would have had to do was get the pucks up to the forwards, and they'd be plus. They wouldn't be minuses. They didn't have to worry about it. You know, and it's not like the D had a great game anyway. It would have been a great game to experiment with different pairings.
You hope that they do it in some of the games that are to come. I do want to say the first time we watched Bogdan Kieselevich play, not great, but again, that's the first time I've seen him play, so.
I completely disagree.
He had some tough moments.
His tough moments though are completely him trying to find out where his limits are. And you can tell that he's a veteran, smart IQ guy because he's doing that in the preseason, one. And two, if he's doing that in the preseason, you know he's going to readjust. And it's going to be, you know, so I'm going to wait till I see him in the regular season. But what I saw from him was a guy who had pretty good IQ, was definitely leaning defense first.
But he's also good with the puck.
Yeah, he's good moving the puck, and he even jumps into the play. I mean, I was making a joke, like, he's like Danny Markov. He's like a better Danny Markov. I love Danny Markov. He used to play for the Flyers. If he didn't, if he,
oh,
you know,
did he?
He,
did he?
If you could give up smoking, if you could give up smoking cigarettes in between periods, he probably would have been a hell of a lot better defenseman. But you know, it's I think Kieselowicz, or I don't know how you pronounce it. I'll never say it. You know, I think he's exactly what Florida needs, and I think you know he can either run a really good third pairing or you know help out Yandel. And I think ultimately, ideally, you want him and Yandel together, because I think that might work out and make the most out of Yandel, make the most out of him, and then your third pair
is
Well, I mean, I think it's open to whoever wins it, whoever plays the best. I mean, I would just rotate a bunch of guys early on in the year. You're traveling a lot early on in the year. You're going to Finland and back. You're going to have some injuries. You know, I would. Here's the thing: are they going to carry three goalies? They're probably going to, which means you can't carry all these forwards, which means you got to waive some guys. Or you're carrying vets and putting, you know, Mammon, Borgstrom, and all these guys in the minors to carry these.
I don't think it's going to be Borgstrom. I think it's going to be Mammon or somebody like him that ends up going to the minors, more than likely.
Well, I mean, it would have to be a lot because they have like 16, 17 forwards.
Well, I want to get to that now because this is something that is probably the biggest battle coming into camp, which was the bottom six. Now, if that third line looks the way it does...
I don't think it's been a battle at all this camp, which is the funny thing. I think there's been more of a battle final three spots, two spots in D, to be honest with you, and in goalie. I think
perhaps that.
I mean, it's
well, it's less of a battle than we think. That's good.
Yeah, I think that's
well,
I think
well, let's go
that's my takeaway is I'm more impressed or more happy with everyone's performance.
You are very optimistic, which is not normally something you are when it comes to the Panthers. But I want to go to just the bottom six stuff. Like it, Jeremy McGinn, which we didn't know has a back injury, he's missing months, so I don't know when he's going to play again. But that answered one question that we had. So he's out of the picture for a while. Now that Derek McKenzie doesn't have a C, I don't know how much he's going to play, if at all, if he plays. Same with, well, Michael Haley, we assumed, was getting waived anyway. But
yeah.
How much Derek McKenzie's going to play? I really don't know. I don't think he's going to be playing much at all.
Here's what I think's going to happen. And I don't know if I agree with this, but here's what I think's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is a lot of guys that should make the lineup and will eventually make the lineup and play in the team when the team's at its final resting spot are going to start the year in the AHL. I think Henrik Borgstrom might be one of those guys. I think Owen Tippett might start the year in the NHL roster and Borgstrom star in the AHL. They want to give Tippett – they want to give Tippett five games and send them back or something. You know, I think – and then maybe Borgstrom moves up and they give him a couple games in the AHL to, you know, and some time in the AHL to kickstart, get some more learning and legs under him. I think that they're going to give some of these vets a chance and then move the young guys up and waive them. And basically, you know, we gave you a chance. We did, you know, blah, blah, blah. We need to, you know, move on.
I think that that seems reasonable. I don't think Haley gets a chance. I think he's probably done, period.
I mean, McKenzie, I think...
McKenzie certainly seems like somebody who might get that chance. I think Brouwer's the only exception to that. I think Brouwer is actually going to be a guy that is on the fourth line pretty much all year.
I don't. I think he's going to have a lot of games scratched. I mean, to me...
Well, if he's scratched,
there's
that's one
no
thing,
way he plays.
To being
I think he's going to be on the roster all year, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that... I think he might.
I think Brouwer is the only guy who's going to be on the roster. I think, unfortunately, Letestu doesn't get signed. And from what I've seen, I'd rather have had Letestu to the 1 year deal and Brouwer on the PTO, from what I've seen.
Well, my biggest question is, like, what happens in the fourth line center spot if McCann's the third center? Because I had always thought that, you know, I thought that Borgstrom might start the season.
Lamico looks really good.
If he's the fourth line center, then sign me up.
Yeah, but I think that's maybe you know, he played today in a good spot for fourth line center. He centered today in practice. He centered Sevier and what's his name, Mammon.
That would be fine. Totally okay with that. Can I also say briefly on the penalty kill, now that we know that Derek McKenzie's going to outer space, probably, unfortunately. You know, one of the jokes we had, Brock and I, was that he's very good friends with Derek McKenzie, so I don't want to disparage him too much. I think Derek McKenzie's been good for the Panthers, but I think he's aware of what's happening with the organization. Okay, before you...
He's been good as, like, a tax purpose, as in, like, you know, they can keep writing off years that Derek McKenzie has belonged to them. Yeah.
I mean, living in Florida is fun. I like living in Broward County. I would like to do that more than where I live now. Anyway, the point being, just briefly on the penalty kill, so what's it going to... we know Barkov and Trocheck are going to be the number two. So what's it, Sevier and McCann, the second two? Looks like it. I know Sevier
yeah, I think,
play, but
I think
that's probably what it is.
I think the key to penalty killing is rotating a lot of guys in so everyone can do it, and injuries never really affect the penalty kill that much, especially in forward spots, because other than a few areas of penalty kill for forwards, it's pretty teachable. I mean, the whole getting up and blocking shots, like, you know, the working the box, working the diamond, a lot of that stuff is just courage and just knowing the system. And a lot of fourth line grinders, a lot of bottom six guys, you know, to make a lineup.
Sevier could do it.
To make the bottom six of an NHL lineup, you're the guy who's studying all the systems. You're the guy who's always putting in more work. You're always the guy who's willing to block the shot or whatever to make the team, because you're scrapping to make the team. So penalty killing is going to come natural. So whoever's going to be in that spot is going to, you can spend the first 2-3 weeks of the year teaching a penalty kill. And, you know, sometimes around Thanksgiving, they'll be good.
Penalty kill was pretty good, too. Penalty kill last year was a problem to start, and then it got pretty good by the end of the year. Don't think penalty kill is going to be a problem.
I think that's the same thing. I mean, yeah, the only time the penalty kill looked terrible that I've seen is when McKenzie and, you know, those guys have been out. So I think they'll be fine. Hunt looked really good on the penalty kill. That's a guy who's going to be a call-up this year, I think, and hopefully a really important part of Springfield. Greco looked pretty good. He can penalty kill. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, knowing when to apply pressure and when not to on the quarterback, right, you know, starting the breakout, and that kind of is a learned game. But, you know, that's something, you know, the guys that they're pushing out of the penalty kill, like McKenzie and stuff, that's where they sucked at it. That's where they got burnt there. They didn't know when to apply pressure to the quarterback at the top of on the blue line or behind the net when he had the puck. But they were good at, you know, just diving into lanes. So they did that more often.
Right now we could say we're somewhat optimistic. There are positives. And I'd be just watching that first preseason.
I think they're going to be battling with Toronto and Boston for third. I mean, it's not like all it's going to take is Sedano Char to break something in his hand, or it's going to take Patrice Bergeron to, you know, have a rough start, or, you know, Toronto not being able to figure out how to incorporate Tavares with Matthews and keep them all happy, or, you know, what if Nylander doesn't get signed, and that, you know, all that has to happen is for them to lose 4 or 5 games in a row, and when they shouldn't, and the Panthers are 3 points up at the end of the year in third spot and have a division spot and are, you know, can battle it from there.
I've said it. I think that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about Florida in the top three in the Atlantic discussion, but you kind of know, like, this team is going to surprise a lot of people.
Michael Hutchinson is on waivers today.
Well, that's not a surprise.
With Oscar Dance and Matt Molson, Jordan Nolan.
Well, that's interesting. Well, so, we'll see what happens with Hutchinson.
So there's one more roster spot for a defender or a forward.
Well, we think Hutchinson's going to start the year in the A, and that's not a surprise.
If he's cleared on waivers for like the first 2 weeks or whatever, he doesn't count as a roster spot. Yep. They can put him down whenever they want to bring up somebody or to have a roster spot. So, you know, this gives them that window through when they need to make the final, you know, probably the first week of the season.
Yeah.
To do what they need to, at least with goalies.
To finish the thought here on the Panthers, just before we go into other NHL things, breaking news. We'd have to put a siren in on this show for breaking news.
Thank you, Chris Johnston, reporter Chris on Twitter.
Yes, of course.
I want to tag that.
When you look at this team, it's a team that They're going to surprise people. They're going to annoy the crap out of everybody in the top of the Atlantic Division. They get to beat up on bad teams below them. And they're just going to go out and do their business. And they're going to relish every opportunity they get to play Toronto and Tampa and Boston. Because that's going to be their chance to prove to everybody, you know how good we are? We're really good. And we're going to beat somebody. And we're going to beat you. And we're going to shock you when we do it. And so that helps. I mean, even if they, like, the goal, of course, is making the playoffs. And I think most people think that this team is probably a playoff team. But, you know, when you look at the optimism, you can see where they're building from. You can see that there maybe are tweaks that are being made. And you can see that the players that they've added have made them definitely a little bit better in some spots. And it's gonna be fun. Now, you just hope that the optimism is not misplaced. But beyond that,
here's what we know. We know what we already know. The offense is going to be good. The defense is pretty good. They just got to figure out the mix. The goalies are pretty solid, and they're much improved from where they started last year, and especially given the injury concerns, that's good. And it's just roll the dice with house. You never know.
Last year they were pretty healthy outside of goalies.
But, you know, the one thing we didn't know was would they come in with some positive momentum? Would they start to tinker with things? Would they, you know, and so far they are.
Based
and it's just
on that
about
one
keeping
season game that we saw, there's some things.
Well, I saw both of the Nashville preseason games I don't want to say right now, the NSA is definitely listening. So
On a hooky stream. Well, anyway, the point is, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this couple games. Their next two games I don't think are televised, but there is one in Orlando that will be, so I'll definitely try to watch that and see what goes on there. We have to talk about the rest of the NHL, because while we were doing the Brock McGillis podcast, and while I was trying to recover from my cold or whatever it is, the NHL went completely mad, and lots of random stuff happened, and it was all crazy. So how
new
bad
idea.
Are the Ottawa Senators?
New idea. UFA or like the draft or something's in August. Like, in all of July, nothing can happen. No one can sign contracts. No trades can be made. Everything gets shut down. And then in August, we have this all the time. Because this is the best way to get ready for hockey. I mean, this or the World Cup of Hockey, which was pretty cool, is the best way to get ready for the NHL
season.
That's
part
because,
about that, of course.
I mean, well, yeah. I mean, like, those, like, gimmicky things. Like, little, you know, things that remind you how hockey can be fun. And, you know, Eric Carlson going to a fun team. You know, Eric Carlson and Joe Thornton together. That makes me excited
Eric
about
Carlson
hockey.
Eric Carlson and Brent Burns together.
The Vegas Golden Knights going for it makes me excited for hockey. And you know what? I think that's a good move because, frankly, at this point, they already kind of messed up the traditional how to succeed as a expansion team. You know, like, oh,
building team.
Well, yeah. Like, you're supposed to, you know, come in, build the depth pool all the way up, and, you know, take 5 years of suffering before getting good. And they're just like, all right, screw it. Let's just roll with it. You're already this deep, and you know, your best asset's Cody Glass, and you don't have that many prospects. You might as well get rid of a few to get Max Pacioretty. They tried to get Eric Carlson. You know, I'm sure they're going to get somebody else.
Mark
Yeah, Duchesne's out there.
Or Jordan Eberle, or Anders Lee, or any number of the players that have 1 year left and are not going to re-sign with their current team.
Right.
I have to say that I really like that trade for Vegas, number one. Because it means Max Pacioretty is not going to be a Panther.
Love it. I love the extension more.
Yeah,
the trade was okay. The extension is what I really care about.
I don't think nothing against Matt.
I think he's a good hockey player and everything. It's just, you know, like, we were just talking about how great it is that the Panthers have a top six. Why are we in a rush to add anybody else to the top six who isn't Henrik Bjorkstrom, who we were talking about adding to the top six at the end of this year and next year anyway? You know what I mean? Like, you're running out of spots.
Well,
we'll
get to Artemi Panarin in a second, because I think that's
Oh, gosh.
Well, we'll get to it. But, I mean, overall, I mean, I'm already getting him. I'm getting him nervous. But, I mean, all that the Golden Knights did. They got rid of David Perron, and they got rid of who the hell did they get rid of? James Neal, I'm sorry. They went to Calgary, and they replaced him with Paul Stastny and Max Pacioretty. to trade up as far as I'm concerned. Now, the problem they have is Shea Theodore's not signed and Nate Schmidt suspended, so their D-core is going to be a little bit dicey. But, I mean, at this point right now, I was thinking Vegas was probably going to win the division. That was until San Jose traded for Erik Karlsson. But, I mean, the Golden Knights, I don't know how much of a fall they're going to have because last year they shot the lights out and Marc-Andre Fleury had a historically good season. So there's naturally going to be some regression, but they're still going to be pretty damn good. You know, I mean, adding Stastny and Pacioretty for a second line, whether it's the second line or the first line based on what we see with, you know, Marchessault, Riley Smith, and William Karlsson, I guess that's something that they have to decide. And by the way, can we stop talking about those two wingers for Vegas now? Because the Panthers have Mike Hoffman and Evgeny Dadonov, and I think I would take them over Marchessault and Smith. Just saying. But
it kind of worked out.
I mean, for the Panthers, if they kept either or of both of them, they would have not gotten Evgeny Dadonov, who had a better season. I can't say that enough, and I don't think we need to say it again.
Right, but let's not also discount. They didn't get Dadonov because of this, but they maybe go out and get Hoffman or feel pressured to go out and add a guy like Hoffman because of everyone saying, you let Marchessault and Smith go for Dadonov or, you know, whatever, and those two having a good year maybe forced them to go out and get another guy of that ilk. Maybe it didn't. I don't know. But either way, I'm happy with how it worked out.
A player for the top six, but Hoffman.
And they made up for it.
And they went up even and didn't. And yes, they took advantage of a very stupid Ottawa Senators team. Can you believe, like, when we talk about the Karlsson trade, can you believe that after what happened with the Hoffman deal, they went back to the Sharks and then traded their captain and best player to them? I can't believe Pierre Dorion did that.
I don't know if it's Pierre Dorion's that much of a dum-dum or if it's Eugene Melnyk's that involved in hockey operations. It feels like Pierre Dorion's literally just reading cue cards half this time, or is just told, like, you know, oh, just only deal with these teams, or, you know, this is, you know, you can only talk to these three people because I only like these three people. It's at that point. Like, I mean, this is a guy who literally is the worst owner in sports now. I can't believe it's not somebody running the Raiders, but it's not.
Well, no, things could definitely count, but I mean, the point being, of course, I mean, all that's going on, that interview with Mark Borowiecki was cringeworthy. Don't know why they had Mark Borowiecki interview him. They dropped it at 10 o'clock on a Monday night when Monday Night Football was being played, and the tweet still got ratioed.
And I thought the Vinny Viola interviews were bad.
That one was terrifyingly bad. And they're talking about all these players, and now, I mean, the Karlsson trade happens, and I have to be honest, like, if any one of those players, the prospects, Balsers or Norris or any of these picks actually turn out good.
I like Balkers, but, like, at best he's, like, mouging good, you know, like, at best.
Yeah, and it, like, for... And for
Josh Norris is, like, McCann good at best.
I mean, I guess the tell was that he was a first-round pick.
I mean, it doesn't take much to be a first-round pick.
Especially if we were talking about the Ottawa Senators. Who trade them away like candy.
Who draft Brady Tkachuk fourth overall instead of, you know, keeping their pick for next year. I mean, it's ridiculous. Instead of, like, Philip Sedina, who's right there. I don't know. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. They're really a terribly run organization, and it makes me probably more optimistic about Florida when I think about it. You know, it readjusts my perspective. Like,
could be worse. What will the Sharks look like with Erik Karlsson? I don't know if they're necessarily better than Winnipeg or Nashville, but they clearly now...
Here's some things no one's talking about, though. Like, is their power play going to actually suffer? Because they, like, what if Karlsson goes to the PP2? You know, like, is that bad? Or, like, what if Burns goes to the power play 2? Or they both, like, don't work together on power play 1 because...
I don't know, but you know what? I'm actually going to be really excited to watch. Why not? Because those are good problems to have.
Yes.
I think most teams would kill to have those kinds of problems. And let's be honest, like, they didn't give up Ryan Merkley. They didn't give up Timo Meier or Thomas Hurdle.
They didn't give up anyone.
They didn't really give up anybody. And now, like, and they still have
I mean, I like Chris Tierney. Chris Tierney's not bad. I don't want to.
Chris Tierney's not a bad player, but you know what? Some good team's going to get him at the trade deadline this year.
And he's just got to put up with it for a few months.
Got to put up for a few months. But I mean, like, if you're the Sharks, you know you don't have much longer with Pavelski. You know you don't have much longer with Thornton. You want to go all in. This is the year to go all in. And I love NHL teams that understand you got to go all in, and they have. Now, again, are they going to win the cup? I don't know, but they gave themselves a puncher's chance of doing it, because if they had brought back the team basically that they brought back from a year ago, they would have been good, but they probably would have been only second round good. Now with Carlson and Martin Jones getting hot, you could easily see them winning the West and winning the Stanley Cup. They're that good, and the West is a murderer's row, but they play in the division with a lot of wild cards as opposed to, you know, the Central, where everybody's going to kill each other.
I tell you this, I think that the President's Cup is going to come from the Metro or the Atlantic this year.
I would say, you know what, if it's Toronto, Tampa, I think it's going to be one of those two teams winning the President's Trophy, because they're just going to
have
bad opposition.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when you play in a tough division like the Pacific, I can't see a Pacific team winning the President's Trophy, because you have to win so many division games. You're not going to be able to, I could see a Central team winning it. Like, I could see St. Louis just going, like, if Chicago doesn't really do well this year, I could see St. Louis just going off.
It could be Nashville or Winnipeg, but, you know, for the Sharks, I mean, like, that's a fun team that they've got there. That's a fun team. And you know that Doug Wilson does not really care, and he will trade somebody at the deadline to get a Mark Stone to put them over the top. You know that they're going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an arms race, and it's going to be, I mean, I think Chicago just has an injury on the back line. They lost Connor Murphy for probably till mid-December.
Alexander Petrovich.
I mean, yeah, I tweeted, you know, Petro to Chicago, E5, you know, Eklund confirmed.
Eklund confirmed it. I think that could be a possibility, but...
But, you know, like, what if Chicago goes out and, like, pulls, like, an actual solid defender? And it's like, okay.
Well, like, you maybe think about St. Louis, and you think about the way that they've improved, and I really like the way that they've improved, and if they get the kind of players that they know they could play well, and they add some of those young guys involved, that's a dangerous team. I mean, the Stars, I mean, a couple of years ago, were they not the most fun team to watch in hockey when they're just going up and down the ice and racing against you, and they made it to Game 7 of Round 2? You know, that was awesome, and hopefully they can recapture some of that. And again, like Colorado, we still can't forget last year they actually did much better against Nashville than we thought they were going to do, and they were a solid team, and I still think they are a solid team. There's going to be good teams in the West that don't make the playoffs this year. I don't necessarily think I could say that about the East, because the East has probably four or five teams that are legitimately crap. So
I think there might be one good team, two good teams that maybe don't make the playoffs this year in the East, just, you know, because sometimes, you know, injuries or luck will get in the way.
New Jersey and Carolina kind of fall into
that. Florida could, like, there could only be three teams from the Atlantic that make the playoffs.
There could.
That's a real situation. Like, Florida could be 1 point out again, because maybe they lose, maybe Luongo only puts in 20 games this year. Like, that could be a thing that happens.
It is definitely reasonable, but, you know, I think that the more likely scenario is that a really good team from the West misses out that would have easily made it in the East. And I think that we've seen that in recent years, and I think we're going to see it again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it's going to be hard for Dallas Stars to make the playoffs. It's going to be hard.
The only truly crappy team in the West is Vancouver. Everybody else, you could see them with a range of possibilities.
I think now we can start saying Edmonton's going to be a crappy team.
Well, I'm going to say that because they have McDavid, anything is in theory possible, but I'm more likely to lean towards them being bad than to them be good. Like, I right now would tell you I'd put Arizona ahead of them, just in my standings right now. I mean, whatever that means. But when you look at the West, it's just Carlson just makes it that much better, and it just makes it that much more fun. And I mean, I'm now going to start to like try to watch as many Sharks games as I can because you want to see them.
Oh, for sure. I'm going to try to get some Sharks Carlson gear. I mean, like, there's a very real possibility Joe Thornton retires with the Stanley Cup now.
Oh,
I'm excited.
I hope
I'm excited.
Like, if you're rooting for a team that's as a neutral, you want to see win the
Stanley Cup. Oh, they're now my West
team. Now basically number one.
They're now my West team. They're my number one West team.
I still think Nashville's a ton of fun too. Gotta be honest. And
I gotta. They had a couple shots at it. You know everything. I gotta go back to.
Gotta go back to
San Jose.
Gotta go back to the Sharks well.
I mean, if San Jose is eliminated and Nashville's there, I'll jump on. But, yeah. You know, I'm gonna ride or die with Carlson.
A couple of other weird NHL things that have happened in recent times. I think the big one, of course, was Steve Yzerman leaving as a general manager of the Lightning. Now, I was listening to a lot of talk about that. Some people are saying Seattle. I guess it's possible that it's Seattle. A lot of people are saying the Red Wings because, of course, they are because he wants to spend more time with his family. The other alternate explanation that could be in play here is, of course, you know, the Lightning don't want to lose Julian Brisebois. And Steve Yzerman says, if I'm not going to come back at the end of next year, let's just get Brisebois and his GM, help the Lightning out and make it a better situation for everybody involved, because Brisebois has been the one that everybody says he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy. And, I mean, again, the Lightning are fine. Steve Yzerman, I mean, yeah, he did make a couple of dumb decisions. But, I mean, his overall body work was so good that Julian Brisebois doesn't really have to do much to make that Lightning team better.
Yzerman is generally considered top five GM in the league. So, yeah, it's big shoes to fill, but it's also a guy who's considered for every rumored GM job that comes up for the last 10 years.
Basically everybody who's come up, yeah, as you said, everybody
wanted a GM. And with the way Montreal's going and the fact that his last name's Brisebois and, he's a French speaker, that fuels a lot of rumors and Tampa's smart to lock him up. Here's my read on this is Steve Yzerman still reading everything so much ahead of the game than everyone else. I don't think this is a play for Seattle. I don't think this is a play for Detroit. I think this is a play for whatever. But he knows he's been in Tampa for 5 years, right? His family's been in Detroit all that time. So this allows him to still get a ring if Tampa wins it. This allows Tampa, a team he likes and helped create, get handed off to a guy he's worked with closely and has a relationship with and probably has a vested interest in succeeding, to get the team at a good point in time with no drama, no handoff, no speculation. But he gets to take 2 years, maybe 3 years, to hang out with his team. I mean, hang out with his team, his family, his new team, or his old team, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, still be in the game, and whether it's taking Seattle when it comes in or, you know, when Holland or Red Wings, because Holland's still around there, and, you know, eventually Holland's going to start handing things over, and Yzerman will be the first name that comes up. And he just, you know, it's smart for him to keep his options open and take that break now and recharge his batteries so he's ready to go. When the landscape's different, because it makes no sense to go to Detroit now. What's he going to do?
Wait until the pieces fall into place. He is a guy who definitely looks ahead.
Seattle can't happen for a while, so he might as well take the break.
Until what, 2020, 2021? So he's got some time he's got to wait, but recharge his batteries, and once he recharges his batteries, he's already proven that he could build an organization, basically. When he took over that Lightning team, they were a dumpster fire. And now they're the best team in the East, pretty much.
Yeah, and he's still going to be able to, you know, when the playoff run starts for Tampa, he'll go to all the games and be up there and get to, you know, be involved with it and everything and feel the rush and, you know, get his name on the cup if they win and all that stuff. And
you know that he is going to get not all the credit because it doesn't all go to him, but he built this team basically. And, you know, Brisebois could make a move that ends up helping the Lightning, you know, go over the top. But still, I mean, he built that team to where they are loaded then they have all these prospects. And they traded away a good chunk of them to the Rangers for McDonough. And while I didn't like the McDonough contract, the Callahan trade looks bad in comparison. Like, he's found a way to build this team. And even in spite of some bad moves, that Lightning team is still loaded. Loaded. And he signed, what, Stamkos to a crazy contract and Kucherov to a crazy contract. He could drop the mic and leave now. Now I think the fear is that his legacy's tarnished if the Lightning don't win the Cup, because they've been so good for so long. Because
he's so young, and you know, it's his, that was his first.
To be, for your first GM job, to basically build a team from nothing to like dominant contender every year.
And they could have won. I mean, he was what, a post away, two posts away.
I mean, let's think about
from
it.
Early that let's one think year. About it.
In 2016, they made it to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final with an injured Steven Stamkos. In 2017, they would have made the playoffs if injuries didn't completely derail that season. And I have to be honest, like, I think the Lightning coasted a little bit in some of those latter games of the series against the Capitals, feeling like, if we lose, I mean, it's going to suck, but we have more chances. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a mentality thing, but now that they have it, like, it feels like this is the year the Lightning win the Cup. It really does kind of feel like this is the year where they go out and do it. Something tells me now that they're going to win it for Stevie Y. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that seems silly to say, but it just seems like right now, now they've got the challenges in the East, they have the motivation internally to do it, and they now have all of the, you know, motivation externally, like people saying, can you win the Cup? Are you going to win the Cup? Are you going to take that step? You know, like, since 2014... They weren't quite ready against Montreal that year. Then 2015, Cup Final. 2016, Eastern Conference Final. 2017, would have made the playoffs if it wasn't for injuries. Game 7 of Eastern Conference Final. It's hard to be consistent in this league, and they're going to be fine. They're not just going to be fine. They're probably... Yeah. I think right now, if I had to pick a Cup winner, it would probably be them.
Yeah, but I'm not... I don't think he has to worry about... Osmond has to worry about his legacy or anything like that. I mean, you look at... some general managers like Holmgren, who, you know, were a first-time general manager for 5 years, took a team to a Stanley Cup final, almost won, you know, got pretty far. But, you know, he's effectively never going to work again. His legacy as a GM isn't that great. And it's because of...
pretty dang good.
Right. And you know, because Eisman navigated that during... situation remarkably well. He talked about some of the contracts he signed. You know, the Marty St. Louis, the Drouin. I mean, like, there's a lot of things.
He came out gangbusters on that Drouin trade.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's took so many hard situations, and, you know, through patience and through just basically asserting his will, has come out the victor on a lot of deals. And
either he gets what he wants from his own guys, or he finds a way to maneuver a situation in which he can make a bad situation good for his team. And Drouin was bad, right? It was a terrible-looking situation, and he ended up winning the trade and got, you could argue right now, the more important player in Sergachev. You know, he won that. The San Luis situation was a disaster, and he still ended up coming out pretty well in that trade, yeah? You know, and listen, Stamkos, he got to sign for comparatively nothing. Kucherov got him to sign for comparatively nothing. Yes, I mean, Ryan Callahan, not great. Some of his other contracts, like Alex Killorn and Andre Palat, not great. But you know what? If that's the
worst. That Killorn one's good. Don't worry about it. That
if that's the worst that he's done, and I mean, yeah, McDonough's not great either. But if that's the worst that he's done, and he also has John Cooper, who we all agree is one of the best coaches in the league, like, and. He got rid of, like, a good chunk of his farm system to trade for McDonough and JT Miller, and yet they still have, what, tons of good players? And, like, and all of a sudden last year, here comes Braden Point. It's just the Lightning. It's just how they do. It's just how they do their stuff. And it's like, that's the team you want to be, you know? And Steve Yzerman and the new owner helped get that team to a point where you envy them. You want to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. Right?
I just can't wait till he makes my Red Wings so good again.
Ah, ha, ha. Well, I can't wait for the Panthers Lightning series when the Panthers beat.
I can't wait till he merges Team Young Guns and Team Europe and the Red Wings into one monster. And it's just He just runs the Red Wings where they only run 25 years and younger European players.
That would be the Tommy Kulikowski fantasy.
Yeah. And then he just cycles them out. He just asset manages them to death. It's going to be awesome.
Well, you know what? You could see it happening. You could see it happening. Then there's the other stuff NHL-wise. You read that story from Robin Lehner from The Athletic?
Yes.
That was heartbreaking.
It was.
That was a story that I'm glad it was public because, I mean, we could say, oh, Robin Lehner's not a good goalie, but boy, that's, you know, you read that, you're just heartbroken. And that's, I mean, when we talked about hockey culture and all of these things, like that's stuff that most hockey players would bury because the culture of the sport dictates that you bury it. And then he didn't. And he came out and said, these are all my demons that I've been trying to deal with. And I'm glad that he dealt with them publicly. And I'm glad now that the Islanders gave him another chance, and I hope he succeeds. I mean, we think the Islanders are going to be terrible, and they should be, because they need to get Jack Hughes. But now you just want Robin Lehner to succeed. You want him to succeed, because then it will allow more players in this sport, of all sports, to open up about their demons, if they have them, and go out and get help and say, we have to say that this is happening, because it makes it better for everybody else who's going through that sort of issue. You know, and he's gone through all sorts of stuff that I cannot imagine going through, you know, and you want the players to be open and forthright about it because then it allows the fans to view you differently and allows them to empathize and sympathize with you more. And it makes it easier for other players who are going through it in much the same way to talk about it. And that's important because there are more players than Robin Lehner who have gone through what he has gone through. You know what I mean? And that is something that we just need to make sure that there is more talk about it, right? You want the league to care more. And now that there are examples, you now find that I think more fans are going to start to say, well, we can sympathize and we empathize and we hope, you know, players like this can get the help that they need. And it appears that Robin Lehner has done that. I mean, because you read that story and it was just, your heart broke every time you read another sentence. It's like, this isn't going to get worse. Oh, crap, it got worse.
I think the biggest point they brought up was talking about the stigma you know, as a goalie, you're dependent on to be like this, you know, a wall, brick wall, somebody who's always dependable, always the last line of defense. You can't let anyone down. And, you know, that idea of saying, I can't be your support system tonight because I'm feeling weak or I'm feeling vulnerable or, you know, this is happening to me or something.
He pulls himself out in the middle of a game because he had a panic attack.
You know, like, and the stigma of, you know, in the future, these people won't be able to trust me to do my job or they won't trust me to be there for them because they... Yeah, because they don't know that in their time of need that, you know, I could be the best teammate in the world or I could be, you know, the best goalie in the world. But if they're worried about me being there in that moment of time, something's going to be off between our working relationship or something. You know, it's going to be hard for him. It's going to be hard for the team. And, you know, that's a very real fear, I think, for a lot of people in hockey. And when it comes to talking about this, and I think for, you know, just a lot of people with, you know, hockey's a job for this guy. It's, you know, everybody with their issues and their things that they are worried will get stigmatized if they, you know, somebody at work finds out about it.
We talked about this with Brock McGillis last week. It was about one specific thing, but you could translate all of that to mental health and it's almost the same discussion. It's not something people talked about. It's not something that people felt comfortable talking about because no one knew how to deal with it. When we have more knowledge now of how to deal with mental health issues, and most athletes have some of these problems, you'd think they have it all, but the pressure on them is immense to succeed, right? And playing in Buffalo over the last couple of years could not have helped Robin Lehner, and I don't mean to say that lightly, but, you know, that pressure has to be immense. And you read that story, right? And all that he was dealing with, you just want somebody to succeed because you feel the pain that people are going through, especially when you've dealt with people who had mental health issues in their lives. In my family, I've had it, and I know most people have had some sort of connection with somebody who's dealt with something like Robin Lehner has been dealing with. And you just want more people in hockey to be able to speak openly about it and deal with it. It's important to deal with these things, yes? And it's important for more people to understand this goes on, and it doesn't make you a bad teammate. It doesn't make you a bad hockey player. It makes you human. And I don't think sometimes people in hockey understand that. And I'm glad, of all the people who would understand that, I'm glad Lou Lamoriello was one of them. You know?
I hope he does well, but I also hope that, you know, people don't use those who speak out and come out and, you know, and voice their truths as use cases of, you know, whether people can do or cannot do things. You know, if he gets shelved this year, you know, it shouldn't be the, oh, well, you know, the next guy comes out. Well, you know, Lehner couldn't get through it, so this guy's not going to be able to get through it. Because, you know, yeah, there's always mitigating circumstances. And like you said, you know, the Islanders aren't expected to be good, which if you're a goalie might be good because he'll get a tons of shots against. And, you know, if he can put up respectable numbers and, you know, even
a trade deadline to someone.
Right. So, you know, this could be good for his career, you know, for a lot of reasons. But whether it's good or bad for his career, yeah, you just hopefully this just reminds you that, you know, like hockey players are regular people. They also deal with regular people things. And some of that stuff is mental illness. Some of it's addiction. Some of it's, you know, a lot of things.
When you deal with the hockey culture, which has quashed all of this and made it like you can't be different, you have to be different. You can't all be zombie robots. You know what I mean? And let's be honest, a lot of hockey players are zombie robots. They all say the same thing. It all looks like they're reading off of cue cards. And it's not good for this sport. If this sport wants to take the next step, wants to connect with people, in Canada it doesn't have to, but in the U.S., if it wants to get more popular in this country, the players just can't be, you know, pieces of wood. They have to have human issues, and they have to be human beings, and we see it in more places, right? Whether it's somebody saying, hey, these are my demons, this is what I've been dealing with, I hope I'm in a better place now, and hopefully my struggle can inform other people who are going through it that you're not alone and it's okay and the help is out there and we go through this too. If hockey players can end up having that culture where it changes, even if it's slowly, and Robin Lehner, you hope it's just a part of it, you can change a lot of perceptions about this sport, and the sport will be better because of it. And what Robin Lehner did has made hockey a little bit better, and that's important. And in terms of other things going around the NHL, I want to mention quickly, speaking of hockey culture going back and being stupid, can we talk about how, like, all these junior teams now have to scrub mentions of Fortnite because it's a distraction? Come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, they have to scrub mentions of Fortnite and stuff, but...
What's wrong with Fortnite? If it's a team bonding exercise...
I want to scrub Ekblad and Yandel from Twitter.
Ah!
I want to scrub them from the ice. Like, if young kids can't play video games and stuff because it ruins their chances, I want NHL executives to not be able to, or coaches to do stupid stuff that ruins fans' time. Yeah. Like, every time I watch Ekblad and Yandel on the ice, it just kills me because of what the potential it could be, what else it could be. I mean, like, Yandel in a proper role with Ekblad in a proper role gives us two better pairings than the one pairing we have now of them together. It just makes no sense why you wouldn't. It's maddening. It's the one thing that drives me up a wall.
So... In essence, because...
Exercise your demons, Bugner. Exercise my demons.
Yes, yes, yes. But I will say this. Is Fortnite really the biggest problem that junior kids are going to have? Yeah, video game addiction is a problem. Like, addiction is a problem.
Did you see the Michael Delzato thing? How they're talking... The Vancouver Canucks are talking about banning it on the road, whatever. And then in the story, you find out that the Canucks play Mario Kart on the road, like, which is a video game. And then also, it's Michael Delzato. It's Michael Delzato talking about it. Michael Delzato is the player that a porn star had to call him out on Twitter in the middle of the season. saying, stop texting me, stop asking for dates, stop being thirsty. Like, you're really an embarrassment. This is getting close to harassment. Like, here, if now everyone knows, so if anyone wants to date you, they can come contact you right here or something like that. Because, like, you know, how is that not distracting? You know, like
a problem.
Like, before there was Fortnite, there was something else, and before there was video games, there was drinking and womanizing. Yeah, it was and womanizing, or whatever you want to call it. There were, you know,
poker,
cocaine.
Wow.
Oh no, cocaine! Don't do cocaine.
Hell of a drug. I mean, well, first of all. Jeff Merrick, do you know what you have wrought? Dropping a little piece of news that somebody's some high prospect has a video game addiction and has destroyed the NHL. But like the NHL and then Carolina a couple of days after that, team bonding exercise. Everyone's playing Fortnite. It's just like, really? Go Tom Dundon for that, by the way. I do not personally like Fortnite. I don't think it's a video game I would enjoy all that much. But if you enjoy it, there's no problem with it. If you want to play it, please go out and play it. And anyway, what's the difference between Fortnite and Call of Duty, which we know Alexander Barkov plays all the time with Patrick Laine? What's the difference?
Which is cool, by the way, which is fine. Well, which no one's talked no about, issue. By the way. Can we, the NHL talks about all the time and how they play together all the time and everything. It's hilarious how it's just like one's millennial tagged, so.
Well, listen, hey, if the best players in the NHL, Patrick Laine and Alexander Barkov, can play Call of Duty all the time, and still be the best players in the NHL, and be great competitors, and lead their teams to great success, then why can't some OHL kids play Fortnite and not have it be a problem? Who cares? This is the problem with hockey. You gotta get out of the mindset that everything's a distraction, and will keep your focus away from the ice. Do you realize that some people actually might need the focus away from the ice to relieve their mind, to relieve some of the stresses that they have? And it will help them become better hockey players? Has anybody ever considered that before?
It's so stupid. Banning Fortnite. Oh, my God. What are they, their parents? Come on.
George Richards is back. We did spend a lot of time talking about what was going to happen with The Athletic, and they were going to hire a Panthers writer. I did not necessarily expect them to bring back George, but they did.
Yeah. Yeah. They have
put our money where our mouth is.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice. I mean, it's good to have George back. I know a lot of people like him and respect him and everything. And he's good for a lot of the, you know, the beat and the connections inside of the building. I've liked what I've seen from Erin so far this summer. I mean, I've only started, before she was hired with The Athletic, she was, you know, kind of following the team and tweeting. So I didn't know if she was going to be with The Athletic, but I figured she was going to end up somewhere or, you know, do something when the season rolled around in an official capacity.
Sun Sentinel, Miami Herald.
And that's good. I think that I would like a new voice, you know. These are people who have kind of known around this, you know, the beat, so to speak, for a while. I want a new voice. I want something, you know. Matt DeFranks was such a breath of fresh air. He came in, you know, not that many people, he wasn't familiar with it. So he brought his own perspective. He really came up with new stories and kind of, you know, did things on his own. And it was nice. It was good. It was nice to see. So I'm hoping that we see a little bit more of that.
That's the sunset. I think
it would be really nice that we have the Athletic audience base now that, you know, I think the biggest part is when the other Athletic writers start writing more about the Panthers, or if, you know, the Panthers on the Athletic add a better writer, like some, like a real top quality writer, you know, nothing against the people who covered, against, you know, but like we, like, not, I'm not even just like a beat, but like, there's no,
like,
I would like to see a higher level. I'd like to see a higher level of coverage on the Panthers than just,
well, right now your higher level of coverage is coverage at all, sir.
But we're, you know, like, I mean, the coverage is all right and everything, but, like, you know, there's still a lot of miscommunications in the coverage. There's still a lot of gaps in the coverage. There's still a lot of errors in the coverage. There's still a lot of unasked questions in the coverage.
We'll get there. I think if you're the Sun Sentinel, if you're the Sun Sentinel and the Miami Herald, now when I saw a job posting for the Herald and they did not mention the Panthers when talking about the sports section, which is the stupidest thing ever, because you're going to have to cover them when they make the playoffs, guys, and they're the best team in South Florida. The Dolphins are going to be bad eventually, so you're going to have to cover the Panthers at some point, and I would recommend doing that. So you have a chance to provide a fresh angle on the team, and that's what I would encourage the people there to do, because you know the Panthers are an undercovered market. And if you can cover that team in a different way, the fans will respond. They responded well to Matt DeFranks. And I hope that they respond well going forward to George and Aaron. They're going to cover the team really well. And we're going to try to get George on the podcast, because if there's anybody who knows that team really well, it's him. And it adds a layer of, you know, of really, it brings in a base of people who already know him. And that's the Athletics business model. They don't necessarily want to hire new writers. That's why they hired Mike Russo and Portsline and Rutherford and James Myrtle, right? To hire all these guys. They brought in a base of coverage already. That base is already going to be there, and you know they're going to subscribe. And that's what they're kind of doing with George Richards with the Panthers, right? And that's okay. They've had it in other places where they couldn't do that, like with Washington, but that's just a journalistic thing. I hope that there's more coverage, because right now, I mean, George has a good relationship with the team, obviously, but if you want somebody, not adversarial, but brings in that different perspective, it'll make the coverage of the Panthers better. You know, in the last.
It's not adversarial. If it's like, do you want anyone to ask, like, hey, why aren't we breaking up Keith Yandel and Aaron Eckhart? Like, you keep saying that. Why aren't you doing it?
Unless it's us. Now, we have to say, know people in the Panthers listen to this podcast. We've heard that before, and that's good. And
you still haven't heard anything about Henrik Hapola. Henrik Hapola has disappeared off the face of the earth. And when I mention it to anybody, they don't say anything. I can be having a conversation with somebody on Twitter who is a reporter for the team, reports for the team, or works with the team. And when I ask about Henrik Hapola, nothing. Silence.
Shoulder shrug emoji?
Not even anything. Nothing. Back. Nothing.
We'll get there.
So
until there's somebody
on the coverage who's willing to say things to the Panthers that they might not want to hear.
Us, basically.
It's gonna be issues. But
you have to start from somewhere. We'll be fine.
We'll be fine. The new audience is great. It's get the eyeballs, and then hopefully the eyeballs have mouths, and the mouths start moving, and they start saying, hey, we want this, we want that, and then they go out and get reporters that do X, Y, and Z.
Once the demand is there, that's why I'm saying the Sentinel and Herald are going to have to cover it at some point, because they don't have another choice. Because eventually, like, if there's enough of a demand for a team that's going to be consistently good, you're going to need to cover them. And we'll see who covers them. I know that the Sentinel said somebody to that media day. I know that they sent somebody. I don't know about the Herald, but the Herald still has to do that. Like, again, you can't stick to just covering the Heat and the pathetic excuse for a baseball team that's the Marlins or the Dolphins, who you know are going to fall flat on their face at some point. You're going to have to cover the Panthers. I'm telling you, you need to do that. And
Inter Miami.
No. Not Inter Miami. David Beckham's Pink Flamingos.
Inter Miami.
Well, I mean, again, if
they're really Cristiano Ronaldo's Pink Flamingos.
Or Lionel Messi's Pink Flamingos. But, I mean, the whole point, like, that's another kettle of fish in and of itself, and I don't even want to get into that. But we will be back, of course. Please make sure you listen to the Brock McGillis Show. I'm not going to be able to pimp that out enough. And it's evergreen. So you can listen to it whenever you want. And we're definitely going to be bringing him on again, because he's awesome. And hopefully you start hearing him on more podcasts. And I want to do more stuff like that. Talk with people in this sport. We're going to try with guests. We try. We work hard. We're going to get some, because obviously at a point, just listen to us would get boring. And I admit that as somebody who, I like the sound of my voice, even when it's scratchy because I'm kind of sick. And, you know, other times we got to get some new voices on the show. And we're going to try to, trust me. Brock was one, and hopefully it's the start of something very good going forward. And I hope you enjoyed the show, and hopefully now you can be as optimistic about the Panthers as we are.
some of you might know the song. By a different name. It goes like this, you might know it like this. Cause I always have to steal my kisses from you. Cause I always have to steal my kisses from you. Cause I always have to steal my kisses from you. Cause I always have to. But this is where I came from. Well, I'm standing here freezing outside your golden garden. I got my ladder leaned up against your wall. Tonight's the night we plan to run away together. Come on down to me, there's no time to stop. And now you're telling me. Tomorrow, good night. As you know now, we're playing some blues shit, and I hope you like it.